What is up, everybody? Welcome to episode 12 of the Dork Depot. I am your host, GOTUS. Thank you so much for being here today. Just a GOTUS episode today, much to everybody's dismay. Nerdy is still around. Don't worry, BB Nerdy going to be on the episodes pretty regularly. But this is kind of a special braggy episode for you, boy. It's a part meme episode because there's been a running joke in my friend group in Discord about this. And I figured what better way to really just put icing on the cake than just make a whole podcast episode about it. But it's also a topic that I planned on talking about regardless. And I've been meaning to really do a dedicated episode to this anyways. And I'd like to do more in the future because it's something I'm really passionate about. Today is the cooking episode, one of the many cooking episodes I hope to be doing. And more specifically, today is the barbecue champion, master, guru himself, your boy GOTUS. Because you see, I won my first ever barbecue championship contest. Now, full disclosure, there was 8 of us. I had a 1 in 8 chance of winning, okay? But I won. I got first place. I got my Traub's Butcher Shop first annual barbecue competition, first place 2024 trophy right here. It's actually a plaque. It's not a trophy. I might make a giant obnoxious trophy to commemorate the win just for fun because I am a toxic person. And that's toxic behavior, and that's something I would do. So I want to talk about that, and I thought it would be a really cool way to, one, have a place to kind of put down everything that happened that day, because I don't really do stuff like that. It's my first ever one I've done. I would love to do more, but there's not a big culture of it here in Arizona like there is in Kansas City or Texas or like Tennessee and North Carolina and stuff in the South that you see. And I just thought it would be cool to talk about and have a kind of a episode to commemorate it for myself, if nothing else. And you know, maybe somebody out there stumbles upon the podcast because they're trying to find ways to prepare for their first cooking competition. So that is what we are doing today. So we're going to talk about it. I want to talk about what the competition was, the rules, how I kind of went about preparing leading up to the competition. Again, this is going to be kind of like a post-mortem, which I really like doing. I think being able to self-critique and self-reflect is a really powerful asset. Being able to take a project you do, whatever that project is, if it's content creation, if it's a barbecue competition, if it's a D&D session, if it's art, if it's whatever it may be, art's an explosion, by the way, and take it after the fact and dissect it and say, okay, here's what happened. Here's what I did right. Here's what I did wrong. Here's what I would do differently. I think that's an important skill set to have, so maybe it helps you guys approach it in a way that, you know, maybe this will help you guys approach your stuff in a way that will allow you to dissect it, because that's not easy for people. Nobody wants to tear themselves down. You don't need to tear yourself down in a post-mortem. But I think it's a healthy way to reflect on stuff where maybe you're your own worst critic like me. I'm very hard on myself to the point where I actually will cripple myself from doing things because I won't. I'm so terrified that the result will be bad that I'd rather not do it. And I really see that a lot in my D&D. I'm so scared to get stuff wrong and to run a bad session that I don't want to get to that session. And we talked about that on the last episode. I bet a lot of people probably feel that same way. So maybe this will help you with that. It's not that I'm like anxious or I'm scared to fail. In other endeavors, I'm not, but there are certain things that I'm hyper passionate about that I feel that way. So moving on. So what was the competition? The competition was a barbecue competition. at my local butcher shop, Traub's Butcher in Surprise, Arizona. And it was their 1 year anniversary. And to celebrate that, they had a big festival. It was like a farmer's market. They get all their meat from a family farm. They partner with a lot of other local food vendors. Like, there's a local honey farmer. They sell local honey there. They sell local potatoes there and kale and other vegetables that they grow here. A local baker sells some of her goods out of there. So they do a lot that's, like, very community-driven. And to me, I think community is a really important thing, and it's easy to get lost on, especially when you live in a bigger city like where I live. But integrating yourself into the community is a really powerful thing, and it allows you to actually make a positive influence into your community instead of just complaining about the things you don't like about it, right? It's being part of a solution instead of being part of a problem. So that was it. So there was a bunch of local vendors. They sell, you know, local art, you know, like metal signs and stuff that they make. There's like a local dog treat vendor. There's a really big flower farm here, and they were there. Super nice folk. I got to meet them and chat with them a little bit. The honey farmer was there selling their honey, which I'll talk about a little bit later. There was also a car show. It was also partly partnered with some of the other businesses in the plaza. So they were also part of it. And it was really cool. It was a good time. Now, originally, I was going to go for the car show part. For those that don't know, I'm really big in the car show scene. I'm big into it. I'm not big in it. I have a 47 Plymouth Special Deluxe Coupe that I bring to car shows. And I love doing car shows. It's one of my biggest passions. And I was going to do the car show. And then I saw they had the barbecue competition. I was like, I want to do that. Then I was going to try to do both, and I'll talk about some of the challenges and the decisions I made that were definitely right decisions that I made. I opted not to do that, and I just focused on the barbecue competition. So that's what I did. So leading up to it, I knew what the rules were in terms of so there actually is a sanctioning governing body to barbecue competitions. This was a non-sanctioned event, so I want to start with that. It's a non-sanctioned barbecue competition event, which means it's an amateur, you know, it's not held to necessarily the same standards as like your big, like Memphis in May and stuff like that. That being said, the butcher shop and the judges were actually all competitive sanctioned barbecue people that have a background in it, so they look at it from a very professional standard, even though it wasn't a professional competition, which makes my taking first place really important to me, that the judges that have been around really good barbecue, that literally own a butcher shop, do competition barbecue, which is how they got into butchering, tasted my food, and they're like, that's the best rib that we've had. It's certainly the best out of these guys. And there was some good competition there. And I'll talk about the competition too, because that was a lot of fun. I knew going into it that we had to do racks of ribs. Originally, I was told 3 racks of ribs or 4 racks of ribs. And everybody was going to get a single rib bone. And there was going to be a people's choice aspect to it as well. But I didn't have a lot of information on that. But basically, people at the event were also going to be able to try everyone's ribs and vote on the people who had the best rib. I'll talk about that as well, how I felt about that towards the end as well. I took 2nd in people's choice, by the way. I planned on doing double bones for the judges, but they were very clear, single boned. So I'll talk about some of my decisions on that, talk about the inspiration for the recipe, the cook style, everything. I'm going to go through all of it, and maybe it'll give you some inspiration. Originally, they told me that turn-in was going to be between 12 and 12:30 for the ribs, and that I could get there as early as 4 a.m. if I wanted to. And I was like, well, that's not going to happen. I decided to get there around 8, and I was like, I'm worried that's not going to be enough time. I ended up getting there closer to like 7:30, 7:45, and then found out that judging was actually at 1:30, and that saved my ass. I would have been screwed if judging would have been at 12:30. So that was a happy accident that really worked in my favor. The recipe was an Asian-style sweet and heat party rib, and the original recipe comes from Malcolm Reed's How to Barbecue Right, and if you go to his YouTube channel, you can find his party rib. It's an Asian-style rib. That was the core of the recipe that I did, and I stole a little bit of the cook style. I did change a few things. One, I drastically changed the ratios for everything, not just because I had more ribs to cook than one rack of ribs, but for a couple other reasons. Two, I added a couple of extra ingredients that he does not use, and I finished mine, I think, differently than him. I can't remember if he does both of my finishes, and I'll talk about that as well. How I ended up cooking it, I ended up going with my pit barrel smoker, the PBC pit barrel cooker. I decided in the Malcolm Reed video and How to Barbecue Rights video, he actually cuts all the ribs up raw and then cooks them individually. And that was actually my plan. And I've done it that way before. And that's why I felt like if I had gotten there at 8 for judging at 12:30 would have been fine. Because when you cook them like that, they cook really fast. That was my thought process, literally all the way up to pulling into the parking lot to set up. Once I got there and I found out I had an extra hour and a half, really an extra hour and 45 minutes, because I got there 30 minutes earlier than I thought, and then I was an hour later to judge, I made a split-second decision that I was going to keep the ribs whole for a large portion of the cook and then split them and finish them individually. And I felt like that gave me a huge advantage over everybody else, because I feel like the ribs that I tried from the other competitors just weren't cooked enough. They were not very tender, and I don't like really tender ribs. My ribs weren't, I don't like when you pick up a rib bone and the meat is just like falling off. I want to be able to bite into it and pull the meat off the bone easily without losing all the meat. Because if the meat is just falling off the bone, you're not eating a rib. You're eating pulled pork. I didn't want to serve pulled pork. I wanted to serve a meaty, bitey, toothy rib. That was my thought process. So I decided at the last minute, you know what? I'm going to keep the ribs whole. I'm going to season them, throw them in the pit barrel smoker vertically, hang them, and then let them cook for a couple hours that way. Then pull them out, split them, sauce them, re-season them if needs be, and then finish them on the grate inside the pit barrel cooker. I am so glad I decided to do that. One, because there were only 8 contestants, the owner of the shop gave us 5 racks of ribs instead of 4, which I think threw a lot of people off because they brought their smokers with them for 4 racks of ribs. And I'll talk about other people's smoker choices. I was actually going to give a rack away to somebody because I was worried about doing 5 racks of ribs in the pit barrel. But I decided, you know, I could hang 3 on one rebar and 2 on the other. And if you're not familiar with the pit barrel, it's literally just like an oil drum. It's got a vent on the bottom, and then it's got 2 things of rebar poles that slide through the top that you can hook meat on, like a butcher would hook a meat, and just hang it on the rebar, and it hangs over the fire. And the advantage to that is, one, the heat rises, so obviously it cooks incredibly even, The barrel also acts as like a natural vortex, so the heat moves, like throughout the cylinder, like counterclockwise, and it just cooks stuff very even. It cooks stuff really quick. You could really speed up a brisket, for example, in a pit barrel. You'd be surprised how quickly you get a decent sized brisket done. It's limited in its verticality. It's hard to sear on because the grate is very far away from the essentially the coal bucket, but it's very versatile on your fuel. You can use, you know, like Kingsford charcoal briquettes. You could use lump charcoal. You could use wood in it. I felt like I had a really big leg up by bringing a pit barrel, and I'll, full disclosure now, the guy who took second place in the judging also did his ribs on a pit barrel. So I think there's a testament to that. Everybody else that I saw, I think, had a pellet grill. I didn't get down to two competitors that were on the far end of me that had fairly bigger rigs, but they were just really big pellet grills. They had all brought generators and stuff. One guy down at the very end, so yeah, it was all pellet grills, electric pellet grills. There was a guy with like a small Traeger, which all of us were there to have fun. All of us were there, I think, with the intent of just having a good time. Some of the people there regularly do barbecue competitions. Like the one team showed up with like matching uniforms and shit. It was ridiculous. They were a little too serious at first. They ended up being nice guys. I got to meet them and they were a little more lighthearted than I gave them credit for. One guy had like a giant, like you have to pull it on a trailer stick burner that he was telling me he did like 25 briskets for his niece's graduation in it. Like that's how big this fucking thing is, right? I think that was way too much. It was a little bit over the top for what the homework assignment was. The pit barrel was the perfect vessel. And I think that really showed in the quality of our cooks. For both me and my boy Dave that I met there, Fat Kid Snacks on Instagram, who is a Pit Boss ambassador. And he also did bring his Pit Bosses as well. But yeah, his championship, his second place ribs he did on the pit barrel. So goes to show you, right? So that was my preparation. I brought lump charcoal. I got a recommendation from our local barbecue store on the best lump charcoal. I think it's literally called the best stuff or the good stuff. Because I was like, what's the best one to use? He's like, the best stuff. And I'm like, okay. And he's like, that's literally what it's called. I'm like, oh, okay. That makes sense. And then I used chunks of apple wood with the bark still on, like big chunks of real raw apple wood in the lump charcoal as well. I had a checklist. Let's talk about the checklist. I had a checklist divvied up into three sections. I had tools, I had accessories, and I had ingredients. So tools were like the literal tools of the job. I had on there pit barrel. I had on there the lid, the stand, the rebar, the hooks, the core tools that I would need, scrapers, anything barbecue related, fire starters, the lump charcoal, the wood. Accessories were the things that weren't necessarily a barbecue tool that I wanted to make sure I had. Things like vinyl gloves, aluminum foil, trash bags, disinfecting wipes, my knives, my thermometer to probe the meat. Granted, with ribs, you should cook by tenderness, not temperature, but it's good to know that I wasn't going to poison anybody. And two, the probe on the thermometer is great for checking tenderness. So, a little tip for you there. And then ingredients, stuff like the ribs. Well, not ribs. I got those at the butcher shop, but salt, pepper, my rubs, brown sugar, soy, hoisin, my chives, my sesame seeds, everything. Some of the other tools and accessories and stuff I had were like the basket for the charcoal, made sure I have that. Mixing bowls, brush, like to baste everything, platters, cutting board, just stuff like that. Like I brought tables, two tables, two folding chairs, a small cooler, things like that. One, if you are doing a barbecue competition, get yourself a checklist put together. Put it together early, as soon as you know you're going to do it. Have it on your phone or something readily available and add to it all the time. I felt like I had so much stuff on there, and I ended up needing everything that I brought, without a doubt. Second, have people check your checklist, go over it 100 times. And then thirdly, accept the fact that you are going to forget something. And in my case, I forgot my chimney, which is how you start your coals for the pit barrel. I didn't bring a chimney. I completely forgot. And do you need a chimney to start your coals? No, you don't. Does it make it a lot easier? Yes. When it is the way that you start your coals for your pit barrel for the last 2 years and you suddenly don't have it for the competition, it will induce panic in you. And that's what happened to me. And I was freaking out. And I was going to have my wife drive all the way out and bring it to me. And I was like, no, this is why I got here early. Let me think this out. Let's think this through, as Mira the Royal Detective would say. Let's focus on the clues. I ended up just saying, you know what? All the chimney does is it keeps things in a nice little stack while the coals get hot, and then you dump it in the basket. Now, admittedly, it needs some good airflow. So I pulled the whole basket out of the pit barrel, set it in the parking lot with the ashtray still attached to it. I made a nice little house of lump charcoal, and then I kind of filled the edges of the basket out a little bit with some more lump charcoal. I put 2 tumbleweeds in there. Tumbleweeds are your little fire starters. One kind of in the middle and then one more on the edge. And I lit them both and I let them get hot. And I let that just go. And it worked brilliantly. It worked really well. I added some more lump charcoal once it started getting going. And then I brought 2 heat-resistant gloves. So I have one and then I have a second one. And then I used a rag, like a wet rag. And that's how I moved the basket from the parking lot back into the pit barrel, because I wouldn't have had a way to do it otherwise. It did make me want to make like a nice hook for it. I thought I had one, but I couldn't find it. So I did melt the parking lot. The cooking area smelled like melted tar for a while because that thing was fucking ripping. So minor property damage aside, we got through that okay. I also talked about how I was going to bring my Plymouth coupe to do the car show. I was going to park it at the car show and then barbecue. So glad I ended up not doing that. One, I wouldn't have been able to get everything in there. The pit barrel really isn't that big, and I was just going to wrap it in trash bags and put it in the back seat. I was like, this is going to be hilarious. I'm going to show up with this classic car and pull this fucking smoker out and do some ribs. And I thought that was going to be really funny and kind of be interesting. I'm glad I opted not to do that. One, my wife made the... This is, by the way, if you want to know what the difference is between men and women, I'm sitting here like, oh, this is going to be so cool. I'm going to get the fucking smoker. I'll put it in the Plymouth. I'm going to barbecue ribs. And then my wife's like, yeah, how are you getting that fucking thing home? It's going to be hot. I'm like, oh, I did not think about that at all. I'm either going to have to wait hours for it to cool down or come up with a different solution. In 1 minute, my wife saw through all the bad reasons of my planning, which is why I'm married, by the way. So I rented a U-Haul truck. I don't have a pickup truck. I have an SUV. My wife has a car. I have the Plymouth. I don't have a pickup. Wasn't going to put... Wife was not going to go for putting the smoker in the SUV, because that's like the kid's car, right? With what we do 99% of our driving around in. Wasn't going to happen. So I rented a pickup truck. I didn't want to borrow any. I hate when I had a pickup truck, I hated when people needed to borrow my truck. So I don't like asking people for their trucks. I borrowed the pickup truck, or I rented a pickup truck. I looked like a fucking meme at this barbecue competition.
because everybody had pickup trucks. Most of the guys had to trailer their big-ass fucking rigs in on trailers and generators. And I'm there in a rented U-Haul truck. They all brought tents, like big canopies with like brands and like logos and their team names and stuff and their Instagrams. I didn't have a tent. I just stood out there in the fucking heat. I had a U-Haul truck. And I had a pit barrel where everyone else had... I bought that pit barrel at the time for like $250, okay? Maybe $300. The barrel itself was $180, and then there was like another $150 in accessories that came with it that I paid for. I'm there with $300 worth of cooking material and a $40 U-Haul pickup truck, two fold-out tables that were kind of beat up, and everybody had really nice ones that they had like tablecloths for, like with their logos and shit on there. So I just wrapped mine in aluminum foil. I thought that looked good. I looked ridiculous there. My wife visited me and she told me after that she was so nervous for me because I looked so out of place, like literally, because everybody else had canopies and generators and these giant rigs. And I was there with like my U-Haul truck and my pit barrel. So, and my folding table that I use for D&D actually is what I brought. So, that was how I got everything there. It worked brilliantly. It worked perfectly. The U-Haul cost me $60 with mileage and everything. And gas to top it back off. I didn't need to put a lot of miles on it. It had plenty of room for everything I needed to bring. There was no pressure on if my grill was too hot going into the bed of it, and it just worked really well. So for $60, not a big deal. The competition was $85 to enter, and with that, you got your ribs. I won $300. So it was a net gain for me, even with the ingredients and the rental and stuff. So I won $300. So I'm not complaining. I won $300. I cooked ribs and I had a great time. So let me talk to you about the day, right? Let me just kind of go through the whole process. Overall, my thoughts throughout the day was I was very nervous when I got there. I was not very confident I was going to do well. And I'm a fairly confident person. I don't lack confidence by any means. I didn't want to get my own hopes up. I'm confident in my skills and I was confident in my plan. And I really took the time to think about working backwards. If I want these ribs done and in a box at judging at 1:30, what do I need to do? I need to do this. And this normally, whatever this is, right? Let's say it takes 30 minutes. I gave myself 45 minutes. Then I need to do this. Whatever this is normally takes 30 minutes. I gave myself 45 minutes. This normally takes 2 hours. I gave myself 3 hours to do something. I just worked backwards. I filled in the time. I'm glad I gave myself all those buffers. It ended up being a huge lifesaver, and I'm going to tell you why towards the end. I think it's single-handedly what won me the competition was my time management. And I love watching cooking shows and like cooking competitions and cooking contests. And it's kind of a meme to watch those and say that you could go and do it. But I feel like you could definitely learn from that. And one of the things I have consistently learned watching cooking competitions, whether it's Chopped or Guy's Grocery Games or any of the other ones, right? Doesn't matter which ones. Or like my wife loves the holiday ones on like where they got to like carve a big pumpkin and make like a sugar scene and stuff like that. The people that plan accordingly, realistically, almost always win. They look at the time that they're given and they go, okay, I have X amount of time. Can I make this dish in that time? And they'll just say no matter how freaking good I am, no matter how confident or I am, if everything goes perfectly, I cannot get that dish done in time. And that's if everything goes perfectly. And it's rare that that happens. I did the same thing. I thought about every step. How quickly can I do it? How much extra buffer time should I give myself? And I am so glad I did that because I trusted that plan throughout the process where I felt like everybody else kept pivoting. They weren't sure where the ribs were at a certain point, they would check and then be surprised where the ribs were and then start changing things. And I just stuck to what I know works at home, what I know works traditionally, and I believed in my plan. And if there's not a value in that, then you'll get no value out of this episode, because this applies to everything you do in life. And it's kind of a cheesy saying, but a failure to plan is a plan to fail. And that is so freaking true. And it was so true in this. And I'm so glad I took the time to really, even if it seemed a little excessive at home, write down the times and stuff that I wanted for each stage of the cook. Even though I made the last second change of splitting the ribs to not splitting them, it all worked out. And even when I did that, the reason I did that is because I had more time than I thought I was going to have. And I had to quickly think about, okay, I have this much more time. I'm here early. Can I do this now? Yes, I can do this. And I stuck to that plan. So what was the plan? What were some of the challenges I had? First challenge, I didn't think about what I was going to do with the ribs till I was ready to cook them. Kind of a big oversight. You had to go to the butcher to go get the ribs, which was clear on the other side of the parking lot. That was when I started my fire. I started my fire and I was like, all right, I'm going to go and get the ribs now. Walked all the way over to Trob's Butcher Shop, got the 5 racks of ribs, brought them back. And I, keep in mind, this is Phoenix, Arizona. It's freaking hot already, guys. It's hot in the morning. It's 80-something degrees. And I thought to myself immediately, man, I did not bring a big enough cooler to put ribs in. I'm not going to be able to keep these things cold long enough to be safe to eat while I prep them, because I need to pull the membranes off. I need to trim them down, trim them up, get them seasoned, get them cooked, get them on the grill. And I was worried with 5 racks of ribs instead of 4, it was going to take a little bit too much time. Second challenge I had was the membranes themselves. I normally have my butcher pull the membranes off. There's 2 butchers I shop at, Trob's and another butcher in town called Butcher Bob's. Both of them, when I buy pork ribs, I just tell them, and I don't know if I said that. They were baby back pork ribs, by the way. I just say, hey, can you do me a favor and pull those membranes off for me? They're happy to do it. It saves me a step at home and I don't have to deal with it because I hate freaking doing it. I knew they weren't going to do that for a cooking competition, so I'd have to do it myself, which is fine. I've done it before. It's a tedious process, and it's one of those processes that if you don't do it a lot, you're not going to be good at. And lo and behold, I was not very good at it. I was struggling getting some of these membranes off, and I was lulled into a false sense of security because my first set of ribs, I got my membrane off quick on that. Came right off. One big pull just ripped a whole huge part of it off. I'm like, sweet. The other ribs did not go as well. So I made an executive decision that, you know what? I'm not going to overthink this. One, the reality is you are not going to know if a membrane is on a rib. If you have a very, very defined palate and you're a critical person judging, then yeah, maybe you'll know. Maybe you'll know. Maybe you'll know that membrane is still on there. But it's not that it's not edible. It just gives it a little extra toughness sometimes to it, a little chewy feeling. I felt like I was confident enough in my cook and my flavors that it wasn't going to matter. So what I ended up doing was just using a butter knife, and I just scraped the back of the rib bones off really good. I felt like I got enough of the membrane off that way, just scraping each rib. I was happy with it. And one of the contestants next to me, one of the other competitors, was like kind of panicking about it. And I even told them, everybody was really nice, by the way. Everybody was helping everybody else if they had questions. Nobody was like an asshole about anything. And he was like, man, I'm having a hard time with these membranes. I was like, dude, I would not even worry about it. I was like, they're not going to notice. I gave up pulling mine off. I'm not going through the hassle. The other guy next to him was like, dude, I hardly ever pull my membranes off. Nobody notices. And I agree. I don't think the vast majority of people will notice. I'm glad I didn't waste time, because I was so stressed out about getting the membranes off, that once I just resigned, like, hey, I'm just scraping these and they're going to be fine. I really believed it, I just started to enjoy myself. I just started to really enjoy the process. As far as keeping them cold, that solved one of my major problems because I was able to get the ribs prepped really fast by not struggling to try and get the freaking membranes off. So I prepped two of them, got the membranes off, scraped them. Additionally, if you don't know, where the edge of the bone meets the meat, and then you get like your next bone, right in there in those crevices are veins. And they're perfectly safe to eat. You don't notice them, but there is quite a bit of blood in them that can look unappealing if it's hooked out onto the meat and doesn't burn off or something. So all you do is you just take your finger and you just, from the bottom, just push all the way up to the top, and all that blood will shoot out of each one of those. I did that on all my ribs. I felt like I was probably the only competitor that did that. And I don't know if that made a difference or not, but I felt like it did. Got all the blood out of the ribs. I didn't really trim my ribs up a lot. And again, it was very intentional. I just kept them, like any really nasty looking like flaps of meat I cut off. But as far as like squaring off the ribs, normally like in a really big competition or a sanctioned event, people will cut like the last three bones off because they're much smaller. There's not as much meat on them. They look uneven if you're presenting them as a rack. I left all of them on. And the reason I did that is because I know in the pit barrel, those bottom, like, two ribs will get a little overcooked sometimes. So I left the bottom two ribs on to protect the two ribs before it. It gave me a lot more usable ribs. And then I had basically 10 really small, slightly charred ribs that, for people's choice, some people actually preferred. They said that I like a little more char, and I had a rib for them. It also has a little chef's snack at the end for me and some of the other competitors. So that worked out really well. What did I end up doing? So I prepped two racks. I put them in my small cooler because that's all I could fit in there. Prepped the other three racks. As soon as they were prepped, I put them on the pit barrel so they'd get cooking. And then I pulled the other two racks out and put them on the pit barrel. They went on perfectly safe temperature. They still stay cold. Didn't take much time. Once I decided I'm not wasting time with these membranes, I got all five racks of ribs on right around 9 a.m. sharp. Once on, the only thing I did was manage the fire. I was probably over managing the fire because I didn't have the chimney. I was really worried about stalling out and not having good spread on my coals. So at one or two points throughout the cook, I put more lump charcoal in and I would actually light a tumbleweed and drop it into the basket to help get those coals going. I don't know that it was necessary. In fact, instead of doing it twice, I maybe only should have done it one other time a little bit later than I did. And I think it would have been better. I think doing that, I ran hotter consistently than I wanted to. I felt like it was just cooking a little hotter than I wanted. Once they were on, though, I just left them. I don't spritz my ribs, especially not on the pit barrel. You can, but because I'm splitting them and saucing the shit out of all four sides of the rib, as opposed to just two sides of the rib, I know my ribs come out really moist. So I just left them on there for 3 hours. I did open up my pit barrel a lot more than you probably would during the cook, but I had so many people come up to me and ask about it. And I was just having fun, so I was showing them how the pit barrel worked. So I probably had it open a lot more than I should have, which didn't help, but there you go. I cooked the ribs from 9 to 12, hanging in the pit barrel. Once they were about an hour and a half in, so around 10:30, 11 o'clock, I prepped my sauce that I was going to make. Every other competitor used a pre-purchased sauce except for myself. I was the only one that made my own sauce. I fancy myself more of a chef. I'm neither a chef nor a pitmaster. Let me be very clear. I am far more comfortable in a chef role in a kitchen than in a pitmaster role at a barbecue. I love barbecuing and I'm very good at it at home. But in terms of what I could bring to barbecue is a much more complex understanding of flavors, I think. And the flavor that I brought with this Asian sweet heat sauce that I got from Malcolm Reed, tweaked it with the ingredients I used, I think made a really big difference. And one of the big changes I made was he uses honey in his. I used my local honey from the vendor. And he has a jalapeno honey that has quite a bit of extra heat. And I added a lot more of it than the recipe would normally call for. And the reason I did that is because all that honey, it's got like chunks of jalapenos in it. So I got all that into the sauce to let it sit and let those flavors become friends. The flavor of my sauce, I'll be honest, I was super happy with. The judges all came by just kind of checking out everything. Everyone was really intrigued that I was doing an Asian-style rib where everybody else was doing a Southern-style rib. I let the judges try the sauce. They had like little spoons on them. Owner of the butcher shop and stuff like that. They tried it and you can see in their face, they were taken aback. They were like, wow, that is so many flavors going on. And they were in love with the sauce. And I was really proud of it. And it gave me a lot of confidence for the rest of the cook. So I was excited about it. One, it's a flavorful sauce. And when you make it yourself, you can add and subtract whatever you want to make the sauce what you want. And I knew I wanted a little more heat in the sauce. So I used a slightly different hot sauce than I used a sriracha, but not the common sriracha. I used the honey, the jalapeno honey. I also added garlic into it, which is not in the original recipe. Garlic makes everything better. Just know that. And I added a lot more ginger, because I wanted that to counteract some of that heat. And what I got was an absolutely phenomenal flavor. After 3 hours, and then I went to the bar across the street and I just started to drink. I had a tall ass beer. Me and a bunch of the other guys that were cooking all went over to do shots of tequila. It was a great time. We were having a freaking blast. It was the most fun I had had in forever. I had such a good time. 12 o'clock, I pulled the ribs. I pulled all 5 racks off the pit barrel, got it closed back up, put the grate in instead of the rebar. Then I started slicing the ribs one after the other. And I was going to cheat a couple of them. So basically, you cut it as close to the bone to the right, like the rightmost bone and the leftmost bone. So you have all the meat on one bone, and then you have like 3 extra meaty ribs to give the judges. And I was going to do that, and maybe that would have been smart to give the judges really meaty ribs, but then you've got 3 less appealing ribs for the people's choice. I split everything 50-50 as best I could down. I ended up being very happy with it. I had plenty of good ribs to choose from. I did lose, I think, 3 of my best ribs in the grate of the pit barrel, where the 2 like handles is a pretty sizable gap. And I had crammed so many ribs in there to try and finish them up in 2 batches. I ended up losing 3 or even 4 ribs. Going forward, I know to kind of be more mindful of that or block that off better. Because I felt like I lost some really good ribs there. I pulled the ribs, I sliced them all up, and then I sauced all 4 sides, like, heavily. Brushed the sauce on, made sure I had good coverage on all 4 sides. I hold it by the bone, and I turn the rib as I sauce it, and I did that for every individual rib. All 5 racks, probably 12 ribs apiece, back onto the grate, and they sit there for 5 minutes. So I could put half of them on. I just let the other half hang out. I put half of them on, 5 minutes, turned them once, resauced them, let them go another 5 minutes. That 10 extra minutes, it probably did like 6 minutes and 6 minutes realistically. One allows the rib to further cook down
making it more tender, and it helps set that glaze really well. Then I pull the ribs off, put them on paper plates, and then wrap them in aluminum foil, put them in the cooler. My wife came by with a bigger cooler for me to rest the meat, so I put everything in there. Then I did the second batch the same way. I did not end up re-seasoning any of the ribs. I felt like my seasoning coating when I seasoned everything was really thick. I was very happy with it, and I actually used the seasoning in the sauce, so I wasn't too worried about it. I felt like I had enough flavor. All the ribs started resting at probably 12:15 to 12:30 by the time I actually pulled everything off, split it, sauced it back on, 10 minutes, 5 minutes flip, 5 minutes pulled, rest, put the next batch on, 5 minutes flipped, sauced, 5 minutes pulled off, wrapped, and rest. Okay. They all ended up in the cooler, 4 or 5 plates of ribs wrapped in aluminum foil at 12:30 or so. We had to judge at 1:30. Everybody was kind of commenting like, oh, you're done? And I'm like, yeah, I'm done. And it made me a little nervous. But the most important thing you can do with meat is let it rest. It is the most critical and most often overlooked aspect of barbecuing meat. And not just barbecuing meat, but cooking meat in general. Meat has to rest. And you'd be surprised. If it's wrapped in aluminum foil in a cooler and then you put towels on top of it, it's going to stay hot for 2-3 hours, no problem. It'll stay plenty hot. That resting lets all the juices redistribute throughout the meat, lets it continue to cook a little bit longer and get nice and tender, gives it a beautiful bite. I don't think anybody got near the rest time that my ribs got, and I think that was the single biggest difference. And the reason I had more time to rest than everybody else goes back to the planning. I planned to get those ribs done originally at 12:30, and I ended up getting an extra hour, and that hour was used for resting, and that's why I ended up cooking everything the way I did. At 1:15, I started pulling the ribs out of the cooler and then transferring them to clean platters in little piles, like maybe 6 or 7 ribs each, kind of in like an arrangement. And then I do sesame seeds and chopped green onion over the top. It gives it a beautiful presentation. I did all of the ribs, and then I picked the 3 best ribs that I had. I didn't pick the 3 longest ribs. I picked my 3 meatiest ribs that weren't really short. So they were like a medium length, but they were all consistent. And then I did my judge's box, which the judges give you a styrofoam box to present the ribs in. All they give you is the box. You have to think about how you want to prepare that. I brought my own kale. I think only one other competitor, the guy who took second, brought his own kale. I don't know if the other guys brought kale or not. I didn't see their judge boxes. I know that 2 for sure did not, or 3 for sure did not bring kale. I don't know about the other 2. I put down big leaves of kale, the ribs on top, in the middle, nice and tight. I very precisely finished them with the sesame seeds and green onions. Brought those over to the judges' table at 1:30 exactly, and that was it. It was done. Everybody had a great time. The one guy next to me, I felt really bad, had a grease fire on his Traeger. His ribs caught fire. Everybody jumped in to help him out. I felt bad because I was literally pulling my ribs, so I could not help him. There was just no way I was where I was. I could do anything for him, but I did go over and check on him, ask if he needed anything, if he needed some extra ribs or anything. I would give him some of mine before I sauced him. He was very appreciative. Very nice guy. Awesome dude. Everybody I met there was wonderful. Let's talk about the event. The event went amazing. The way that worked is people had to buy tickets from the butcher. I don't know what they were. I think it was like $20 got you a couple of tickets. You could trade those tickets in for one rib, to try one rib from one of the competitors. That's how the People's Choice thing worked. Genius way for him to recoup the cost of the ribs, because the prize money, I don't think he skimmed anything off of. I thought he would, but he didn't. So that's how he paid for the ribs and stuff. I'm sure he did very well, because they ran out of tickets.
I have here my bowl of tickets, and I mean, just a quick count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. There's like so many in here. 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 9, 30. I'm just going to say there's at least 50 tickets in here. Probably about 50 tickets exactly. That's how many people came to my stand to try one of my ribs. Every one of these tickets was a rib. So I'm sure he did fine. I like that you had to buy a ticket to trade in for a rib. However, if you didn't get 8 tickets, and I don't think you did, you couldn't have tried all of the ribs. So you had to pick which ribs you wanted, which inherently is going to put some people at a disadvantage. Secondly, and this is going to be my little bitching moment here, the competitor, there was a competitor there whose entire family showed up, and I mean all fucking 35 of them, and bought tickets. Well, you know whose fucking rib they voted for, and lo and behold, he won People's Choice. I think there maybe could have been some better management about who could buy tickets or not, but I guess you can't really, like, they came over and tried my ribs. Okay, so if they come over and eat my ribs, that's people that are not going to be, and maybe they were, maybe their family voted completely honestly, but I doubt it. Let's be real here. One, it takes ribs away from me to give to other people that are going to vote honestly, and two, he could get votes for ribs that he didn't trade. Like, he could have been like, yeah, just vote for my rib, whether you give me a ticket or not. So you see what I'm saying? Like, he's naturally going to get more votes because he has more ribs available, because he has people voting for his ribs that didn't take ribs, and he has more of them voting for his ribs in the first place. So I didn't like that the People's Choice was set up that way. Maybe I'm just salty that I got second, but I feel like getting second against what was going on over there was a win. But I got first place overall in the competition, which is the judge's choice, which is really what you want anyways. And it was the bigger payout. I won $300. I think he only won like 100, maybe two. The event itself was awesome. I got so much wonderful feedback from people that came up to me and talked to me about how great my food was, how much they loved my sauce, how happy they were that I did something different, where everybody else did a very traditional Southern rib with a Southern barbecue sauce. And I did like a sticky teriyaki, I called them Asian sweet heat ribs. One lady came up to me and told me that she does not like anybody's barbecue. She'll only eat her husband's barbecue and nobody's as good as he is, and that my ribs were better than his. And I was like, damn, all right, thanks. That means a lot. I just got a lot of feedback like that. I had so many people tell me that my presentation was hands down the best, which is something I've always prided myself on. And I had a feeling I was going to be able to take everybody on presentation. And lo and behold, I scored highly on that as well on both categories. So I ended up getting first place. My buddy Dave next to me got second place. Third place, which did not get a payout but got a plaque, was the really serious matching uniforms people. I really wanted to beat them more than anything. That was my goal. And I did. And yeah, the guy with the very large family, who had excellent ribs, by the way. His ribs were very good. So I don't want to take that away from him, but he got the People's Choice Award. So congrats, Damon. You got People's Choice with the help of your family. I don't know if you'll ever hear this, but you're a cool guy. And next time, bring in all my family, buddy. So that was it. That was my cooking championship podcast for everybody to listen to. It was a lot of fun. I'm definitely going to be on the lookout for more competitions. Hopefully we have some. Maybe I can convince some sponsors around town to host another one. But it was a blast. If you're into barbecue, even if you don't feel like you're a professional, I certainly don't. And do a look. Go see if there's any backyard barbecue competitions or amateur competitions and go do one. it was a ton of fun. I am definitely going to be on the lookout for more. Also, I had a bet with my friend Iadon that if I got first place, he had to quit his job and move from Oklahoma to Arizona to open up a food truck with me. He has yet to honor that bet, but I wanted that in the podcast, so we just have some record of it. So we'll see. We'll see if he honors it or not. Iadon, come on, buddy. That food truck is waiting. Thank you guys all so much for listening. We're going to be back soon, probably a week or two, with an episode with BB Nerdy. We got some cool stuff coming up there, some D&D-centric stuff. We'll have our second session, our first really full session, on May 11th, so expect a post-mortem after that. Really looking forward to that one. I think it's going to be a good time, and maybe we'll have some more cooking stuff in between. As always, thank you all for listening. That's all I got for you. Peace.
Yeah.